This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 283.
This podcast is brought to you by Verodesk. Verodesk can convert any desk into a standing desk so you can maintain a healthy, active lifestyle in the office or at home. Verodesk comes with a 30-day risk-free guarantee and free shipping both ways. To learn more about Verodesk standing desk solutions, visit verodesk.com/workelevated. That's verodesk.com/workelevated.
This podcast is also brought to you by BioLite. Transform your low light runs with a BioLite Headlamp 330, an ultra-thin, no-bounce headlamp that's so comfortable you'll forget you're wearing it. Go to biolightenergy.com/MTA and use code MTA at checkout for 15% off your order. Try it for 30 days, and if you don't love it, they'll take it back. That's BioLite, BIOLITE, energy.com/MTA and use code MTA.
Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where we empower you to run a marathon and change your life. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this long-awaited episode, we recap the 2019 London Marathon. We'll tell you all about our trip to the UK and what it was like to run through this amazing city. Plus, we share tips on dealing with race day nerves. And to get more help in achieving your running goals, you can learn about Academy membership and coaching when you visit marathontrainingacademy.com. So, Angie, how are you getting on since the marathon?
I'm feeling great. London's been a marathon that we both wanted to do for such a long time. We had near perfect conditions on the day. I had a really strong run and I was chuffed with the time I got on the day. It's lovely to be back home, but I've got the creeping feeling that being in London for all that time has changed something about us. Does it sound like our voices have changed, Trevor?
My voice does sound a bit skew-whiff. Not sure what happened.
Must have been too much time in the pub. I wonder if the dear listeners have figured out yet that we're not the real Angie or Trevor.
The real Angie and Trevor sound much more American, don't they?
Hi everyone, we're Alison and Mark from Norwich in the UK. I just ran the London Marathon as well. Trevor and Angie have been a bit cheeky and wanted to pull a prank on you all. Thanks for listening to the MTA podcast.
Cheerio!
All right, great to be on the podcast again, and so excited to tell you guys all about the London Marathon, bringing you an epic race recap, and thanks to Alison and Mark for doing the opening bits for us. I think their British accents are spot on. What do you think?
Well, I think they've probably been doing it their whole life, so yeah, better than we could muster.
So Angie, does it feel like you've fully gotten over your jet lag after coming back here to the U.S.?
Yes, I think after a few mornings of waking up at 4 a.m. and not being able to go back to sleep and being ready for bed at 6 p.m., I'm finally back on schedule, so it's wonderful.
The bad thing about getting up that early, like you get hungry earlier in the day for lunch.
And then if you can't go to bed earlier to compensate, then it's like more hours for eating. It has been surprising to see you up so early. Actually, a listener wrote in and he said, I think Trevor was the one who introduced the release of the Kraken mantra, which, you know, we've had for several years. He says, but Angie, on this episode, you inadvertently improved it with a modification for Trevor. When Trevor said that he got out to do his long run relatively early at 11:30 a.m., you said, at least it was before the Kraken noon. So Trevor's new mantra should be, release the Kraken noon. And that came from Brent. I thought it was kind of funny.
Hey, no one likes a smart aleck, Brent.
I do.
I tell you what, the last two weekends were huge weekends for a lot of folks that listen to this podcast. So we got some action-packed shout-outs here to kick off the episode.
Yeah, we'd like to say congratulations to Philip on his London Marathon PR. He's been working with Coach Nicole and been getting some great results, obviously. We also got this note from Andy. He says, hey, Angie, I just wanted to apologize for not saying hello during the London Marathon. You passed me at mile 24, and despite desperately wanting to start a conversation, I was quite simply in too much pain. I was hoping for a sub-4-hour PR this year, but unfortunately, I missed my target by 70 seconds. Needless to say, I had a fantastic day. I hope you enjoy spending time in our fantastic city, and please keep up the good work. So, yeah, it would have been fun to say hi to Andy during the marathon, but I totally understand. It's like after mile 20, you know, sometimes just being able to, like, know your own name and keep one foot in front of the other is all you can do.
Andy, you can do it next time you see Angie in a marathon.
who knows if we'll be back to London or not. But well, congratulations on still running a very strong race. And we don't always hit our target times, but, you know, that's part of the love-hate relationship with marathons. And this note comes from Allison. She says, my London marathon experience went well, and I finished really strong with the last 5K faster than my first. I definitely put my London demons to bed, knocking off a whopping 1 hour and 27 minutes from the last time at London, and 42 minutes off my marathon personal best. I came home in 4:01. I must learn to stop weaving.
And this is after building back from pregnancy, too.
That's right. 42 minutes off your personal best is truly epic. And I don't like to use that word very much.
So congrats, Allison, of Allison and Mark fame, the British Angie and Trevor.
That's right. We'd also like to say big congratulations to Bill. He ran the Vancouver Marathon last weekend. He says, many thanks to Coach Dominique for the guidance I needed to successfully score a massive PR of over 6 minutes and a Boston qualifying time as well. I nearly lost my eagle when the 3:20 pace bunny snuck up on me with only 7 kilometers to go. I resolved then to fight off that bunny all the way to the finish. I just asked myself, how bad do you want it? And I thought about all those training runs to even put me in this position. I ran steadily and hard all the way to the finish and crossed the line in 3 hours, 18 minutes, and 47 seconds.
Well, that is awesome. That's blazing fast. Congrats on the PR and the BQ, Bill. And I like his question that he asked himself, you know, how bad do you want it? You know, all the training runs you've done to get here, let's not let that be in vain.
Yeah, you have to really keep yourself focused because the mind is often going to try to talk you out of pushing so hard. We'd also like to say congratulations to Katrina from Australia. She ran the Spartan Beast. She said, the Spartan Beast in New South Wales, Australia, was 21 kilometers with lots of hills. Obstacles used to be my strength, but thanks to MTA, now my running is my strength. I walked away with first place in my age group. Thank you, MTA.
Well, that is awesome. And I found that to be true, too, when I did Spartans a couple years ago. The running was the easy part. I think for a lot of people that do obstacle course racing, running's like the most tedious, boring, and most difficult part of the whole thing. So
that's right. But if you are working on your endurance through long distance running, then yeah, that can be your secret superpower.
Tedium is our superpower. All right. Well, like I said, a lot of cool stuff going on. Congratulations, everyone. Running races, getting to the finish line. If you earn that PR or if you don't, no matter what, if you cross the finish line, it's always an epic accomplishment in my book.
Well on my way, well on my way.
All right, well, it's time for one of our world-famous race recaps. We had such a good time in London. I'm still living in the afterglow of it. We've been home a week already, so.
It was that good, right?
It was that good. It was great. So, Angie, what can you tell us about the 39th edition of the London Marathon?
Well, it was held on Sunday, the 28th of April, 2019, and this marathon has been operating continually since 1981. There are a few ways to get into the marathon. They have a ballot, and this year, over 414,000 people entered the ballot, and obviously, there are not that many spots.
Can you imagine a marathon that big?
That would be, like, that'd be nuts.
Okay, we're going to let all you guys in.
I guess if you staggered it, the starts enough, you could maybe accomplish it. But anyway, it's really hard to get in through the ballot to London. We've tried for a number of years, and so we were really thrilled to be able to get in through the charity option. And the marathon this year had 42,906 starters and just a few less than that finishers. Hugh Brasher is the race director, and the marathon has raised over $1.3 billion for charity since it started. So its tagline this year was, thanks a billion. So that's pretty amazing that, you know, the marathon can do so much good. Like I said, we got charity spots with the UK-based John Muir Trust, and our project was to raise money to plant trees on a property they manage in Scotland.
The Mountain Shehalion.
That's right. And an interesting thing to note is that the John Muir Trust actually shares a founder with the London Marathon, a man named Chris Brasher, who was an avid mountaineer.
And Hugh Brasher, the current race director of the London Marathon, is Chris Brasher's son.
Yeah, that's pretty cool how he's taken over the legacy of the London Marathon and is its director.
Big honor to run for the John Muir Trust. Thank you to everyone who helped us raise money to plant a tree. They won't plant the trees until October to April. That's the key planting season there in the Mountain Shehalion, I guess. So there's still time to help us with the goal of planting the MTA forest. We're about maybe 61% of the way there.
Yeah, over halfway there for sure. So there's still time for people to donate to that if they would like. It's 10 pounds to plant a tree.
10 pounds. That's less money than you will spend on an ugly sweater that says London on it at a random gift shop when it's cold outside.
Yes, I persecuted you for that choice the whole trip.
So we're doing this walking tour of London, and all I had was like this thin shell of a jacket, but it was like really cold and rainy, so I just went and bought the best looking sweatshirt I could find for like 20 pounds. And it's not, it doesn't look bad. It just made me look like a tourist.
It's like, imagine the largest lettering that you can fit on a sweatshirt, and then London is in these massive letters, and then
on the back it said
the British flag, like huge on there.
And then on the back it says, this man's a tourist.
Exactly.
So anyway, it's more affordable to plant a tree. Only 10 pounds. Thanks to everyone who's helped with that. And there is still time to help us plant some more. Just go to johnmuirtrust.org/MTA.
So we mentioned that we had a really amazing trip, but things were a little bit rocky before we left. Your dad flew in to help watch our three boys who, you know, had school and sports and couldn't go with us. The day before we were supposed to leave, one of our sons came down with a stomach flu, which is not great. And then I woke up 12 hours before we were supposed to leave, vomiting, stomach flu, absolutely miserable, which, you know, of course, when you're traveling to a marathon, like the London Marathon, it's like, you can't just be like, oh, well, you know, go next year kind of thing. It's like, I'm going to this thing, whether I have to crawl onto the plane or not.
So you're probably imagining yourself, you know, sick as a dog on the plane with a barf bag on your lap.
Yeah, I was definitely envisioning like sitting there on the flight being stared at by people who are grossed out by me vomiting.
And I was thinking, I'm glad our seats are not together on the plane.
Of course, I was hoping that you didn't get it because that would be awful to get there and then, you know, have you come down with the flu. So it was kind of rocky, especially since my stomach felt off for a couple of days, even after we got to London. And then you bought fish jerky in Iceland in our layover, which smelled to high heaven. So my stomach was already like not in the best shape. And then having to be around that smell was... it was challenging, but...
yeah, dried fish, like fish jerky, is what they eat in Iceland, Angie. I was just trying to be, you know, culturally appropriate.
I don't think it's ever culturally appropriate to eat fish jerky and then get on an airplane.
It does smell pretty strong. And I kept wondering, like, you were getting so triggered every time I would open the bag. But I'm sorry, yeah, I can imagine how it would be on a sensitive stomach when you're just barely holding it together.
Yeah, it was challenging. Anyway, long story short, we get to London. I did not throw up on the trip. Felt good by 2 days before the marathon. We were able to see a bunch of things while we were there.
Oh, it was awesome.
We walked miles every day. It was amazing. So I know you've never been to the UK before. What did you think?
Oh, it was great. Everything worked out splendidly. We got there... had a nice room near Paddington Station in Paddington. Big thanks to my dad. I mean, I have a huge debt of gratitude to him for watching the kids and enabling Angie and I both to come on this trip. But yeah, when we got there, we actually spent a lot of time on our feet, walking like, I don't know, 7 to 10 miles a day probably.
Yeah, we did a lot of walking. We took public transportation everywhere, so we kind of got a feel of the whole underground system.
But the first day we did like a 3-hour walking tour.
Right. And the cool thing was our guide was running the marathon on Sunday.
Yeah.
It was going to be his first marathon. So he was kind of like picking our brains about strategy, hydration, nutrition. I'm kind of thinking, seems to be a little late to be figuring this out.
While we were in London, we tried to take advantage of the time and see everything we could see. We saw Trafalgar Square, the Mall, Buckingham Palace, Westminster Abbey, which was just swarming with people. So we walked around London and we had a great tour guide and he was showing us stuff. He pointed out the statue of Prince Frederick, who was the Grand Old Duke of York. And reportedly, the Grand Old Duke of York had 10,000 men. He marched them up the hill and then he marched them down again. And upon further historical study, it would appear that when they were up, they were up. And when they were down, they were down. And it's the opinion of many experts that when they were only halfway up, they were neither up nor down. What do you think about that, Angie?
It's brilliant.
So it really is quite a study in futile action. And speaking of futile action, let's get on with the next thing we saw. We went to the Churchill War Rooms. During the London raids, Churchill moved his command center underground into the sprawling complex underneath the Treasury Building until the end of the war. I saw this amazing Churchill quote on the wall. It says, "I always believed in staying in the pub until closing time." You know, that really speaks to me, Angie.
As a night owl, I suppose it would. And of course, leading up to the marathon, there's a lot of excitement as people start arriving in London for the race. And so, of course, the running show is what they call their expo there. That was held at the Excel building in East London. And it's open to runners and anyone in the public, actually. It's free from Wednesday through Saturday before the marathon. You're required to go there to pick up your bib using your ID and an email barcode they had sent you, and then to test out your timing chip. They have three different colors of bibs with three corresponding starts. Ours was a red bib because we were running for charity. They also have blue and green. Then on your bib also showed the zone where you were going to be lining up the morning of the marathon based on your projected finishing time. They allow ballot and age qualifiers to defer their entry 1 year before the deadline if needed, but this is not the case with charity spots. So that's something that some big marathons don't do, is allowing you to defer. The expo featured lots of booths, vendors, and of course various race representatives from around the world. People representing marathons in Kenya, Norway, Iraq. Trevor, you talked to a lot of people at different booths and got information on all these various races, didn't you?
Yeah. Definitely a lot of races I had never heard of before. It really gives you a sense of just how international, first of all, London is, but also the London Marathon, as one would expect.
Yeah, it was really inspiring to see that. Of course, at the expo, they had a variety of different games you could participate in. They had motivational posters that you could sign. They had a treadmill that was set at world record pace to see if anyone could run that fast for 400 meters. So it's like this big, wide, you know, like rubber type treadmill, and it doesn't stop if you fall. So there were runners who were trying it.
Yeah, I've seen videos of this thing, so it was cool to see it in person. We got there right as the guy was getting on it, but he started running as fast as he could, and treadmill was cranked up faster and faster until they were at world record pace. The people were just supposed to hang on to that pace for 400 meters. And he did pretty good until 200 meters and he wiped out. And I got it all on film. It's award-winning footage, folks. It's my best work. Posted it on Instagram. You can go check it out and see what it's like when an average person tries to run Eliud Kipchoge's pace.
I think that guy was above average because I would not be able to hang on for 200 meters. I'm just maybe like two steps and then I would be like flat down.
I think your pride would keep you upright longer, Angie. Angie's not the kind that wants to wipe out in front of hundreds of people watching.
No, my pride would keep me from getting on in the first place.
That's true.
So we went to the expo on Friday and then we did our MTA meetup on Saturday, day before the race, and we picked a spot near the expo so we could do an afternoon British tea.
Yeah, which consists of tea, of course, sandwiches, and a variety of desserts and scones. They kind of bring it out to you on this tri-level tray. But we had a great turnout. We expected about 20 people, and I think we had over 20 that showed up. So awesome to meet runners from all over the world and hear their stories. And I think there was just as many people there supporting the runners as there were people there to run the marathon.
Yeah, some of our listeners were traveling with their families or they lived in the area, and so it was great to meet them as well.
So I passed around the digital recorder and had everybody introduce themselves. Really fascinating people. Take a listen. Check mic, check, check. This will only be heard by 30,000 people, so no pressure, okay? You seem pretty relaxed, Roger. I think I should start with you. Okay.
Hey, I'm Tim. I'm German. I'm not running tomorrow, so I'm just here to see people suffer and share some stories.
Hi, I'm Mallory, and I'm from Alaska in the States, and I'm not running either tomorrow, but I just have been traveling around Europe for a little bit and wanted to come see all the excitement today.
I'm Roger from Liverpool, England, having lived in Tokyo for 35 years, and I'm running London Marathon for the first time tomorrow. It's my sixth marathon.
Hello, my name is Paula. I'm from Argentina, but I live here in UK. And tomorrow I'm not running, I'm supporting, and that's it.
Hi, I'm Anna from France. Not running tomorrow, but kudos to everyone who does. And congratulations to those who got in.
Hi, I'm Claire. I'm down from Scotland. I work for the John Muir Trust. And so I've come along to support Andy and Trevor, who've been raising funds for us and are helping us to plant trees on the slopes of Schiehallion, one of our properties. So yeah, wishing Andy and Trevor the best of luck for the marathon tomorrow.
I'm Mark from Norwich in England. I'm not running London and I'm slightly bitter about it, but I'll be supporting my wife, Alison, all the way.
Hi, I'm Alison from Norwich in the UK, and this is marathon number 4. It's my second time doing London, and I've got a bit of unfinished business with London because it didn't go terribly well the first time.
Hi, my name's Simon. I am from Leicester in the UK. So I'm running London for the first time tomorrow, which is my second marathon. Just want to say a big thanks to Angie and Trevor for a fantastic podcast. It's really inspiring.
I didn't pay you to say that.
Hi, my name's Kerry. I'm from Sydney in Australia. This is my third marathon, and I'm running for muscular dystrophy.
Hi, I'm Cecilia from Sweden. I'm not running tomorrow, but I decided to come over for the weekend, probably because I'm slightly depressed not being able to run a marathon this spring.
Hi, my name's Mel. I'm here to support my husband Pete. We're from Sydney, Australia, and he'd see his second marathon.
Hi, my name's Isabel. I'm 12 years old from Australia, and I'm here to support my fantastic dad.
Fantastic dad. I like that.
And I'm fantastic dad.
All right, we're here with Roger Berman at the MTA meetup in London. So you're from the UK, but you live in Japan currently. How long have you lived there?
I've lived in Japan for 35 years.
And what got you interested in running marathons?
I'd been running on and off sort of, you know, for a few years, but seriously, I got interested after the 2011 tsunami in Japan. It was quite a scary experience being in Tokyo at the time because of the potential nuclear problem that might have been, which luckily didn't happen. And I was just looking for kind of like a, what MTA likes to call, life-changing experience. I just found running to be invigorating and sort of, not just sort of physically, but as a kind of like a mental stress reliever as well. Really relaxing, almost meditative.
Exactly. How's the training gone for this one?
The training's gone really well. I've been using MTA's coach, Lynn. Hi, Lynn.
She's great.
I mean, before I'd always sort of tried to train myself, but I kind of reached, I didn't reach a plateau. I never improved, full stop. So I just thought it would be good, you know, for London to really kind of shave at least 30 minutes off my time, because I always average at about 6 hours. So, you know, I'm hoping to get under 5 hours 30 this time. So
right on.
We'll see. And thank you very much to MTA, Coach Lynn, and everybody.
Well, thank you, and best of luck out there tomorrow. All right, I'm here with Simon Wright at the MTA meetup in London. Simon lives in
Leicester
in the UK. This will be marathon number what for you tomorrow?
So this will be number 2 tomorrow. So I did New York as my first one last year in November, which was an awesome experience. I thought it would be my only one, to be fair. But after I did that, I got bitten by the bug, as you say.
So you didn't get to the end of the marathon and decide, I'm never doing that again. So it must have gone well.
Well, it went well up to about mile 22. And then my kind of quad seized up. And that was just weird. And then mile 23, I did say, what am I doing here? I'm never doing this again. And I think I stayed in that mindset till about the next morning. And then, when I woke up, I thought, actually, no, it wasn't too bad, you know.
Yeah. It's almost like... They call that runner's amnesia.
Is that right? Okay, yeah. It's a bit like the ladies have with the babies, yeah? They forget the pain and only remember the pleasure. So, I just remembered the joy of it. Forgot all the pain and the hassle and, you know, the discomfort, and just wanted to do it again, really. So I started getting all my, you know, my ballots out and everything, and looking for another race.
And how's the training gone for this one?
Training's gone up and down, to be fair. I've suffered a couple of injuries along the way. Got runner's knee for the first time, which destroyed a couple of runs. But I probably missed about 4 runs in total across the 16 weeks.
That's a lot less runs than I missed. And I didn't have runner's knee, so.
Well, I got you to thank for the plan, because it is one of the plans off the MTA website. So the first one for New York worked like a dream, so thanks for that.
Great.
And I think the next time I'm going to have to start looking at one of the coaches, I think, for my next one coming up in September. So
cool.
Look at that.
Well, congrats on fighting through and getting to the starting line, and have a great marathon tomorrow.
Thank you very much, Trevor, and thank you to you and Angie for really just inspiring racers, runners like me who, you know, this time last year I wasn't really running, and really I've changed my life, so thank you very much for that.
Awesome.
Much appreciated.
Wow, that's powerful. So I'm here with the Kennelly family from Australia, and we're talking about Eliud Kipchoge and Mo Farah, who are racing against each other tomorrow. And Owen here knows his facts. I mean, he's got more running statistics memorized than I do. How old are you, Owen?
I'm 10.
I'm really impressed. So just a minute ago I said Kipchoge's never had a bad day, and you said what?
I said that Kipchoge had a bad day in 2009 World Championships in the 5000 because he came third to Bernard Lagat and Kenesia Bekele.
How many 10-year-olds know that?
Probably 0.5%.
So this is amazing. So how did you learn all this, and what makes you so interested in it?
It's just cool to know all these facts from my teacher at Australia. He's basically just an older me. Like, we know every world record, like 109.58, 219.19, 443.03, 1500.326, 800.149.1, 5000.1237.35, 10000.26.17, and like those, all those stuff and cool facts and stuff.
So those are all the records at those distances.
Yeah.
What's the marathon record, you know?
If you want to do like the world pacing, it's 2 hours and 25 seconds by Breaking 2 by Eliud Kipchoge and 201.39 by Eliud Kipchoge in 2018 Berlin Marathon.
I think you have a career as a statistician. Owen, thank you for sharing your knowledge, man, and thank you for coming to the meetup. High five. So awesome. Check, mic, check, check. Okay, I'm here with Mallory, who's actually from the U.S., from Alaska. You come a long way to be here at the London Marathon.
I have. I came just for this event.
And how long have you been listening to the podcast?
It's been about 3 years now. I started running when I was in college and was just searching for a podcast to listen to while I was running because I'm the type of person who needs a distraction. And your guys' has popped up on in the App Store, and so as a new runner, I felt like it was very helpful because there was a lot that I didn't know about running or had questions about, and I feel like you guys address a lot of the gray areas, but also make it clear that there's no, like, one way to do anything right, so I really liked that, and it's kept me interested in the new episodes. And
I appreciate that. Thank you for coming to the meetup. Thank you for being a longtime listener, and great to finally meet you in person.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
I am here with Alison Armstrong from the UK, Norwich.
Yep, Norwich, the UK.
And you are running the London Marathon tomorrow. Your husband's here to support you. He just ran the Manchester Marathon yesterday. So two runners in the family, kind of like our family. How has your training gone for, you had a baby recently.
Yeah.
So this is your first sort of comeback marathon after having a baby. How does it feel?
Good, yeah. Training's gone really well. Most challenging thing has been the baby doesn't sleep, so he's awake two or three times every night. And then with my husband Mark trying to run as well, that's been quite hard to juggle. But it's gone well. 2 16-milers, done at a decent pace, 2:20s and a 22, which is the most I've ever done in training before. Feeling strong.
How long have you been a long-distance runner? I mean, like, and how did you get into this?
So I've been running only since 2016. In fact, I went from sort of zero to marathon in 6 months. So my dad was really...
You're not supposed to do that.
I know. My dad was really poorly and sadly passed away from cancer. And my husband's mum, 3 weeks later, again from cancer. So I got a charity place raising money for Children with Cancer UK. And that's when I found your podcast.
Yeah.
So when I started, nobody I knew ran at all. None of my friends or family. So I had really no one to ask and listen to you guys. And it's really how I learned everything I know now about marathon running. And what's been so wonderful is I've now got a husband that runs marathons as well.
Did you get him into it?
Yeah. He came and watched London and was just completely inspired and wanted to do his first marathon. And we did that the following year together. And in fact, my brother then got into marathon running. He ran the London Marathon the year after. So
you got your husband into it, you got your brother into it. You were quite an evangelist for the sport.
Absolutely. I just love it. And it's just wonderful to now see so much enjoyment that other people have got from it as well.
Okay, I'm here with Anna from France. How did you get involved in long distance running? What attracted you to this crazy world of long distance running?
I started to run. I was working from home at the moment. I started to work from home and I needed to get out to evacuate, to get rid of all the work thoughts and to do something for myself. So I started to go for a short run, for very short runs first. And then the runs got longer and longer and I needed a challenge to go further. And once, started with half marathons. And after half marathons were done, then I tried to the long distance. I tried the marathon. And after I did once, I'm so happy about it. And I'm getting very high after the marathon, so so I'm just sending you on to the next one at once. Now I have number 4 2 weeks ago.
Which was Paris.
Paris.
And you've run Paris how many times?
2 times now.
I would love to do that race. Thank you. How do you say good luck in French?
Bonne chance.
All right, I'm not going to try to repeat that, but I appreciate it. All right, I'm here now with Phil from LA, and he's here to run the marathon tomorrow. Thanks for coming to the meetup.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So you're running for charity as well. Can you tell us about the charity that you're running for and kind of how it came to be?
Sure. I am running for a charity called Tommy's. It's a UK-based charity, and they support research and raising awareness for preterm births, stillbirths, and miscarriages. So this particular charity had a lot of, or has a lot of personal meaning to me, my family, and our close friends, because my son was born as a micro preemie at 25 weeks here in London when we were living here 15 years ago. When I found out that this charity was in place and being a runner, that they actually gave charity bibs for runners, I jumped on it right away because...
Yeah.
Like you guys, I've been trying for years to get in through overseas ballot, and yeah, it was just an impossible expectation. So to be able to come in through charity was just, it was great.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you might have already mentioned this, but how long have you been listening to the podcast?
I've been listening to for a good 4 years now.
And I know there's a lot of running podcasts out there, but what resonated with you about MTA podcast that kept you listening?
I mean, there's some really great podcasts out there for running if you're looking for technical information, specifically with regards to workouts, nutrition, therapy. But the MTA podcast, I always kind of viewed it as the people's podcast for running because everybody runs for their own specific reasons.
Yeah.
But the reason why I really wanted to listen is because of all the personal stories that you bring up. Obviously, you bring in some really great guests, but particularly the shout outs that you guys make, to hear all the different journeys that your runners go through. They don't run specifically because they want to reach a certain time. They're running because of a reason.
Yeah.
And that's what really resonates to me as a runner, because I'm actually going through my own journey. So to hear other runners go through the health challenges that they're going through, it's something that I connect with right away, and it really inspires me to not view my own health challenges as an obstacle, but as a platform to motivate myself to keep running.
People's podcast. I like it. New nickname for the show.
Okay. I'm sure it's been used before, but yeah.
I think that's the first time I ever heard that.
Okay. Yeah.
You mentioned your own personal journey with your health. Do you mind sharing like what's going on with that?
Yeah, sure. So last year, the spring of 2018, I was diagnosed with liver cancer.
Mm.
So it was early stage, but the tumor was large enough where we had to schedule surgery immediately to prevent it from spreading. So in May of last year, I had a liver resection where they removed a portion of my liver to get the tumor out. 2 months after the surgery, they deemed it a success and myself as cancer-free. Hmm. So I carried on with my life and started running because I, you know, just I was an active runner. But having to not be able to run during my recovery made it, you know, really, it drove me nuts. So to be able to run again was great. But then, and that's when things were going really well for me. I ran more. But then around November, I got word that the cancer had come back.
Mm.
So, but again, it's early stages.
This
is last November. Yeah, so about 5-6 months ago. So, and now they said that because the cancer has come back in a completely different area of the liver, having the same surgery I had before would not make sense. My only option is actually a liver transplant. So I'm now going through that process of getting listed and trying to get high on the priority list to receive a new liver. So,
how long does that typically take?
My personal route to a deceased donor liver is probably going to look like 2 years or so. And the reason why is I actually do have a healthy liver. I just happen to have cancer in that liver. to get a deceased donor liver, you actually have to be in dire condition. Okay. You basically have to be in an ICU to get it.
Yeah.
We're actually taking a different route, and that is to go through a living donor transplant. And what this is I would actually get a portion of somebody else's healthy liver and replace my cancerous liver with it. We're pursuing that option by bringing in family and close friends and any interested MTA listeners. Kidding, I was kidding about that. Come in, get evaluated, and if they find that perfect match and the commitment from the donor, then we could actually schedule it for as early as this summer. And that's what the hope is. In fact, it has to be this summer because I qualified for Boston of next year. So yeah. I need to give myself enough time to recover from the surgery so I can get started with my training again. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you, Phil, for sharing your story, and hopefully you'll get someone to come forward soon and donate. In the meantime, it sounds like you're making big plans and still running your heart out, qualifying for Boston, releasing the Kraken.
Yeah, exactly. So. I mean, in my Instagram that I put out there, anytime I post anything that has to do with running, I always put in the hashtag OutRunCancer because the way we're viewing it. We're just trying to outrun cancer. Yeah.
Wow. If people wanted to follow you on Instagram or connect with you, what's your Instagram handle?
Oh, I appreciate it, Trevor. If you want to, I mean, it's just P as in Paul, Shin, Shin, 8670. That's my Instagram handle.
Well, if I don't see you, have a great day out there tomorrow. Thanks for being an inspiration to us.
No. You guys are the platform for inspiration, so keep doing what you're doing, please.
We've done a lot of these meetups now in various places, and it always confirms in my mind that runners, just in general, no matter where you go, are like a big family, like one big family. And sometimes we don't even get time to talk about like what everyone does in their, you know, their work life. We just talk running the whole time, and that just gives us enough to to talk for a long, long time. But yeah, people are so positive, and it's such a welcoming community, the running world. All right, so what do we do after the meetup? Is that when we went and we rode the gondola? I don't remember.
We did. Mm-hmm.
But I guess our main concern was getting back to the hotel, getting a bite to eat, and then getting plenty of rest before race day, right?
Yeah, of course, I like to set up all my stuff the night before, you know, like pin my bib on, attach my timing chip to my shoe, all those kind of things. I feel like the less I have to think about and do on race morning, the better. So I feel like I got a pretty good sleep the night before. What about you?
Yeah, I did. You know, this race doesn't start terribly early, so extra time to sleep in, right?
Yeah, can't beat that. And I think it took us at least an hour and a half to get from our hotel to the starting line via public transportation. Of course, my anxiety and my nerves are starting to build the longer it takes, you know. So it was also nearly a mile walk to get to the corral area, you know, from when we got off the train. And so you really want to allow plenty of time if you're going to take public transportation or any kind of transportation on marathon morning to get there, to walk to the corral area. And then, of course, the port-a-pot line, or port-a-loos, as they're known in the UK, are very long. So then you want
very long.
Very long. So you want to make sure that you have plenty of time to stand in line to use the bathroom. Another thing related to how much time you're going to need to get to the starting area is that it could be an hour or so after the official start time before you actually cross the start line, depending on what pen you're in. So it's really important to consider that when it comes to ditching your throwaway clothing or planning, you know, to be warm enough up until the start of the race, and also doing last minute hydration and nutrition.
So let's talk about race day nerves for a second. I know race day nerves is a big deal for a lot of people, and I still get nervous before a race, even though I've done 17 of these now, full marathons. So I threw it out there in the MTA community, and I asked people, what helps you deal with race day nerves? Jay says, with me, it is everything leading up to the race that is stressful. I travel to most of the races I run, the packing, the double checking, the flight, the hotel, the expo, and worrying about waking up on time is what stresses me out.
I agree.
He says, generally, race morning, after I realize that I have everything that I need, I am pretty calm, cool, and collected, and then it's just go time.
Yeah, at some point, like, all you can control is putting one foot in front of the other.
Brian says he likes to read Meb for Mortals, that it really helped him prepare for his last marathon. He says, envision it like any other run and do a routine. While I may wake up at a hotel room, the stretching, the clothes laid out, the get ready music helps me prepare for a race day of awesomeness.
Nice.
We need get ready music, Angie.
I'm afraid our definition of get ready music would be totally different. I would want something calm and soothing.
You don't think Black Sabbath would be good?
You'd be playing heavy metal.
Well, I think if we're in the UK, we got to play some metal, you know, like Black Sabbath or some Iron Maiden.
I don't want a pre-race headache. Manissa says, I like rereading tips and messages my coach has sent me or encouragement from friends or just going over the race plan again. It puts me in a positive mood and I feel like I'm in control. Plus, I make lists and try to plan everything that's within my control. For bigger races that I need to travel to, the day before or so, I would make a rundown of all the things I need to do and what time, i.e. wake up, eat breakfast, leave the house, you know, get on the train, etc. I also have a PDF file for all the stuff I need for races, so I just print it out each time and just tick the boxes. This is all admittedly very type A, but the goal is just to go on autopilot on race day, so I don't need to think and just focus on the run.
That's very smart.
It is.
We actually have a whole course in the Academy about race day domination, you know, releasing the Kraken on race day. And there's a checklist in there. And she mentions, you know, having her coach give her a plan. How smart is that to have a race day plan?
That's right. Yeah, it's very important to have a good framework, good mental framework going into the race. And of course, realizing that you're going to need to have flexibility because sometimes things don't go according to plan and you have to adapt in the moment. But, you know, having that positive preparation of, you know, how you envision things going is very important, you know, visualizing the positive.
One of our coaches, Joel, he said, for a lot of my athletes, I hand them a piece of paper with quotes or a listing of their best recent workouts.
Yeah, the more you can remind yourself of the steps that took to get to that spot, the previous successes that you've had can help you realize that you have what it takes, you know, to overcome a challenging marathon or whatever the race is. Andrew says, I need alone time before a race, even if it's only 5 minutes. It doesn't matter when, but I find a few minutes and focus on my breath and become as still as possible. That mindfulness approach really calms me down and refreshes me to run as strong as possible. Melissa says, I like to go over race day logistics a million times ahead of time. Once I'm at the start line, I just give into the experience and let it happen.
I like what Aaron had to say. He said, I schedule a bunch of races for the year, so I don't have time to get nervous about any one in particular.
We've used that strategy a few times.
So when it comes to race day nerves, sometimes, even if you do all those things, you might still feel nervous before a race. I think, Angie, you felt like we weren't going to get there on time. You know, it was weird because we took the tube from Paddington all the way to Greenwich. So, you know, it took like an hour and we had to switch trains and some trains were out of service. So we would get on a train and we'd see other runners and we'd think, okay, great. We're on the right train. Then we'd come to a stop and some runners would get off. And I would think, okay, why are they getting off here? You know, we shouldn't get off till, you know, X. And then I'd second guess myself until the next stop and then more runners would get on. I don't know where those people were going.
Well, there was three different starts.
It's true.
So it's possible that they had a completely different way to get to their start or they knew a better...
Or maybe they're still looking for it. Let the record show, we did get you there on time. You did get in your starting corral, and you ran a great race. So we made our way to the starting corral. Excitement was in the air. The announcers were doing a great job of getting everybody amped up and excited. We started to see runners in costumes, you know, all over the place. Angie, I was in the corral with a lot of people in rhino costumes.
Nice.
What made it cool was there was like 10 or 12 of these people all together, and they were raising awareness for the preservation of rhinos and all the poaching that's going on. So anyway, we'll talk about costume runners a little bit later. That was something really neat about this race. So the runners were taken off, the corrals were being released, and away we went. So Angie's going to talk about the course.
Yeah, the London Marathon is known as a flat and fast course. It's point to point, and it has blue lines that are painted on the course, which would be the exact marathon distance if you were to follow it directly. It's known as the tangent. Of course, in reality, in a large race, you end up weaving around a lot of other runners and going further than 42.2 kilometers or 26.2 miles in the course of your event. One thing I really liked was the course was marked clearly with both kilometers and miles, and they had a timing mat every 5K. So they had a clock, you know, that showed the elapsed time since the mass start had begun. They also had pace teams. The website said they had 65 pacers ranging from 3-hour marathon to 7-hour and 30-minute marathon. So they had a great variety of pacers out there. The pacers were carrying large flags displaying their times, and they were available in each of the three starting areas. However, kind of sidebar, I did notice that the 4-hour pacer for the red start disappeared at mile 5, never to be seen from again, at least by me. Trevor, you noticed something similar too.
Yeah, I finished in front of the 4:30 pacer and my official time was 4:38. So I don't know what happened to that guy.
So we've talked about this on other episodes. You know, it's great to run with a pace group, but do not put all of your PR dreams and hopes in their hands because things can go wrong and they might not be there for you. So that was kind of interesting. So the first 3 kilometers of the marathon are spent heading east from Greenwich Park, where it starts. Of course, it's very congested. So it's a good time to just kind of go with the flow and watch your feet because with a large pack of runners around you, you really have to be paying attention to how you're running so that you don't trip up yourself or someone else. I found it to be a bit crowded the first 5 or 6 miles. And this is also the section of the course which had the most noticeable downhill. So a lot of people notice faster splits during that beginning section. Of course, everyone has a lot of energy and excitement. So, you know, it can be challenging to not go out too fast. But having so many people around you, it does kind of prevent you from doing any all-out sprints that you might regret later. At around the 10K mark, the course goes by the Cutty Sark, which is a British clipper ship that was built in the late 1860s. And kind of around this area, there's a ton of spectators, and the course narrows a bit right through there. Really, I found that crowd support was amazing through the whole marathon.
Yeah, every kilometer, as far as I remember, is wall-to-wall people.
There were a couple tunnels that didn't really have spectators in them, so it would be like you'd enter this quiet zone of a tunnel, and then you'd emerge from the tunnel to cheering people again. But it did quiet down a bit after that Cutty Sark area until about the 20 to 22 kilometer mark, where there were more crowds, and we were preparing to cross the Tower Bridge and hit the halfway mark. It was just really amazing to approach the Tower Bridge. Of course, it's this huge, massive structure. You know, run up the little hill to get on the bridge, run across it, across the Thames River, and down the other side. That was a really cool part of the course.
All right. Here we go. Across the Tower Bridge. Coming up on mile 13. Feeling good. Love it.
So when you cross the London Bridge, if you look to the left, you can see the famous Tower of London. Then you come back by the Tower of London again, somewhere between mile 22 and 23. And we actually toured the Tower of London the day before. We got a good tip from Christy in the Academy who said, make sure you get there early.
And go straight to see the crown jewels.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, the line gets really long. So we did, I think, beat the crowds and got to see the crown jewels. Permit me just to geek out for a minute. I just finished this like massive book on English history, so I've got to throw something in here, Angie. Tower of London was originally built by William the Conqueror in 1078. Of course, 1066 is a famous date in British history. That's when William the Conqueror came over and, some say, invaded the island. William the Conqueror was actually a descendant of Rollo the Viking. Remember from the Viking TV show?
I don't think you can use that as direct history, but sure.
So he came over, invaded, and defeated King Harold Godwinson at the Battle of Hastings in 1066. So the tower is pretty famous because prisoners were kept there. King Henry VIII sent his second wife, Anne Boleyn, to the tower to have her head chopped off, as well as his fifth wife, Catherine Howard. This has been an uplifting history moment. I want to become rich enough someday, Angie, that I can employ my own minstrels. And whenever I enter a room, they announce my arrival.
I'm speechless.
And I would use my minstrels to help me get through marathons. They would kind of like narrate my runs. They would need to be able to run and play the flute at the same time.
Somebody shoot me now.
Gather around, children.
He is brave Sir Trevor, the Duke of Trevorton.
He boldly crossed the sea to run the London Marathon. And he kicked his feet and he girded his loins and he checked his bladder and stopped to pee. And he dropped his phone and he picked it up and he went on running down the road. And he ran and he ran and he ran until he had to stop. Halt! Who goes there? It is I, Trevor, from Marathon Training Academy. I've come to run the London Marathon. Have you trained properly? Yes, I think so. Have you tapered? Yes. And have you remembered to apply your body glide? Yes, I have applied my body glide on my feet and my thighs and my bollocks. We can't say bollocks on this podcast. My apologies. Have you taken your kit bag to the baggage lorry and deposited your rubbish in the rubbish bin? You mean the trash can? Sorry, I'm fresh out of America. And have you remembered to bring along your generation UCAN to fuel properly for this race? I have brought along my UCAN. Now please let me through. Have you remembered to always drink to thirst, but not to overhydrate because that leads to hyponatremia? And have you remembered to kindly move to the side of the road so faster runners can move by and never stop dead in the middle of the road so other runners smack into the back of you? Yeah, I think I've done all that, my man. All right, you can run by the tower. Have a great race. But remember, if you start to get tired, don't quit, because you have what it takes to run a marathon and to change your life.
This has been an MTA presentation. Under the heavy influence of endorphins.
Well, I'm probably not alone in thinking that you have way too much free time on your hands. Our son came to me earlier and said, "Mom, Dad's down there talking in a really weird voice." And so now I totally understand what he was talking about. So after we hit about the halfway mark, there was approximately a mile section where you could see faster runners who were more like at the 22-mile point. And I always find it really interesting to see faster runners. I wouldn't say they were the elite men, but probably like the time qualifying champion, British Athletic Championship qualifiers. And one thing that struck me most about them was that they looked like they were in a lot of discomfort. You know, many times their faces were gritted. You know, those last few miles of a marathon can be really intense, especially when you're pushing all out. And so it was interesting just to be able to see people who had been there and done that and were trying to bring it home. So later on, you pass the Isle of Dogs and the Canary Wharf section of the course, which is a little bit quieter. And the crowds pick up again around the 35-kilometer mark at Shadwell, and the final 5K passes some really amazing landmarks, including Big Ben and Buckingham Palace, before turning in to the finish line area at the Mall.
Big Ben is covered in scaffolding because it's starting to lean. And our tour guide said it'll be covered in scaffolding for about 4 more years.
Yeah, it's getting a facelift, a whole body lift, actually. And of course, they had great aid stations. There were a total of 19 aid stations along the route. 13 of them had water, and they had these 250-milliliter bottles with a flip-top lid, which I thought was awesome because then you're not splashing water on yourself from cups. And they requested that the bottles be drained before you discard them along the side of the road so that they could recycle them. One experiment they did is they did send out to like a certain test group of the runners was a reusable bottle that could be refilled. And so I think they're kind of trying to think ahead to the future and make the race more environmentally friendly. Another thing they did was that they had these little seaweed capsules filled with sports drink at one location. I was really looking forward to trying them, but by the time I saw that they were there, I was like, couldn't get over in time to try one. But you were able to
amazing.
Take one. So tell us what you think.
I wasn't sure I was going to need one or take one, but yeah, by around mile 23, I was definitely ready for, you know, some kind of new experience. So they look like Tide Pods, you know, like what those kids were eating a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just in a big bucket. People are reaching in there with the gloved hand, taking out these Tide Pod looking things and handing them to you. They're made of seaweed. Of course, you don't think seaweed when you see it. You just think of this like gelatin kind of thing in your hand. And the lady that hands it to me says, just eat it like a tomato. Eat it like a tomato. So I popped it in my mouth, bit down, and I was kind of expecting like a gel kind of consistency. But no, instead it like explodes. Yeah, it just explodes like sports drink. But yeah, those little pods are pretty handy. So I probably, you know, ate two or three of them.
Yeah, so they're biodegradable, vegan, allergen-free, and, you know, maybe the future of sports drink delivery. Who knows?
Yeah, it'd be fun to throw them at runners and say, just eat it like a tomato. I thought it was pretty neat. I would like to try it again.
Yeah, I definitely want to try one sometime too.
Just think liquid when you bite into it. Don't think gel. Because you might swallow it down the wrong pipe.
Yes. They also had three locations with energy gels, and the aid stations were available on both sides of the road so that it was easier to access what you wanted with a large number of runners. In addition to the official aid station, I noticed dozens of people along the course handing out drinks, fruit, candy, other snacks. I didn't really take any of the sports drink or gels or other food along the course. Kind of just stuck with the small bottles of water. And of course, I brought UCAN bars with me for my fueling, which I took about every 5 miles.
So we brought Generation UCAN snack bars, which they're called snack bars, but they're also good for fueling with, you know, on a run. We brought those from across the pond and used those for our fuel because we've been using UCAN for so long, just like our tried and true proven fueling source for races. So how many bars did you actually take, Angie?
I used two of them during the marathon. Yeah, I've been using UCAN since 2013. So love the experience, love the solid energy and the fact that I know exactly what to expect.
Yeah, we've actually turned a lot of people onto UCAN, and many of you have seen great success with it because it's really gentle on your stomach. That's the tricky part, is finding something that you can take as you run that agrees with your stomach. It's a slow-release carbohydrate source. It's really good for fat-adapted runners, too. The bars are just really tasty. So go over to generationucan.com if you want to check it out. And of course, you can use the code MTALondon, because this is a London Marathon, to save 15% on your order. That's MTALondon for 15% off. All right, so let's talk about the finish line area.
Yeah, it was definitely an exciting area with all the crowds, and they really gave out a nice medal. It has several of London's landmarks on one side, and then the course on the other side of the medal. Then they give out the marathon shirt at the finish line, so you choose what size you want, and then they give you a corresponding bag, which has your shirt in it, it has all your food in it, you know, a sports drink, a variety of snacks, and it has one of those heat sheets or space blankets in there, you know, in case you're cold. So it was really nice to be able to have a bag to carry all that stuff, because often, you know, you walk through the finish line area and you're like fumbling all your stuff, dropping things, not feeling very coordinated. So, and of course, they have a bunch of photographers that are set up at the finish line area so you can get, you know, a picture that they will try to sell you later. So, yeah, it was a great finish line area.
I like the idea of having to earn your shirt.
Right. Yeah, you don't get one unless you cross the finish line.
So let's talk about the elite winners, men and women. This is a year where there was a lot of hype going into it because Eliud Kipchoge, fastest marathoner ever, was there. And of course, Britain's own Sir Mo Farah was running it too. So it's going to be this, you know, epic showdown between the two, right?
Yeah, well, there's actually an incredibly strong elite lineup for both men and women going into the marathon. So there was a lot of commentary about, you know, all these world-class runners coming together. And one interesting thing is that the London Marathon pays for pace rabbits for the elite runners for the first half of the marathon. So if you look at pictures, you'll see them dressed in the black and white striped singlets. And then, of course, the pacers drop out at the halfway point, and the elites have to take it from there. But the regular pacing for the first half is one of the reasons why we often see fast times coming out of the London Marathon. And, of course, all the hype about Eliud Kipchoge did not disappoint. He came in first place with a time of 2 hours, 2 minutes, and 37 seconds. This was his fourth time winning London. He beat his own course record and set the second fastest marathon time ever. He told a reporter with the BBC, quote, "I'm happy to win on the streets of London for the fourth time and make history. The crowd in London is wonderful, and that spirit pushed me." The second place man was Mozanet Garamu of Ethiopia. He finished in 2 hours, 2 minutes, and 55 seconds. Third place was Mule Washihun of Ethiopia in 2 hours, 3 minutes, and 16 seconds.
You're getting really good at these names.
I'm just winging it, basically.
Just say it confidently and it won't matter.
Then fifth place went to Mo Farah of Great Britain, of course, 2 hours, 5 minutes, and 39 seconds. On the women's side of things, the first place woman was Brigid Koskai of Kenya. She finished in 2 hours, 18 minutes, and 20 seconds. She says, quote, "I'm over the moon with that. I always promised myself on the last mile that I would never run another step, but this is not my retirement."
I like it.
Second place was Vivian Chariot of Kenya. She finished in 2 hours, 20 minutes, and 14 seconds. Third place was Rosa Derehe Bekele of Ethiopia. She finished in 2 hours, 20 minutes, and 51 seconds. And sixth place was Emily Sisson of the United States. It was her marathon debut. She finished in 2 hours, 23 minutes, and 8 seconds. That would be the sixth fastest American time on an eligible course. For the wheelchair race, the first place man was Daniel Romachuk of the United States in 1 hour, 33 minutes, and 38 seconds. Second place was Marcel Hug of Switzerland. And third place was Tomoki Suzuki of Japan. On the women's side of things, the wheelchair race, first place was Manuela Scar of Switzerland. She finished in 1 hour, 44 minutes, and 9 seconds. And she also won in Boston. Second place was Tatiana McFadden of the United States. And third place was Madison De Rosario of Australia with a time of 1 hour, 49 minutes, and 43 seconds. There's also a really cool group called the Ever Presence. And we saw a feature on TV before the marathon about one of the guys. The Ever Presence are a group of 11 runners who have completed every London Marathon since 1981. Of course, this was the 39th year of the race. And they had this feature on Kenneth Jones, who is currently age 84. And he talked a bit about his training and his goal of making it to 40 London marathons in a row. So next year would be his 40th year. And he just seemed like a really great guy. He said, yeah, I might retire after next year. But, you know, he kind of left it open to, he just enjoys running. He enjoys the challenge. He finished this year in 7 hours and 40 minutes. Another ever-present named Chris Finnell, age 60, clocked a time of 2 hours, 59 minutes, and 46 seconds, breaking the 3-hour barrier for the 38th time in 39 races.
Isn't that amazing at 60 to run sub-3 at your 39th London Marathon?
Yeah, that's phenomenal. Just amazing. So there will be 10 ever-presents running London in 2020, as one of the group didn't finish this year. But still just a really, really amazing group of individuals. And of course, people may have seen reports out of the London Marathon about how slower runners were treated really badly out on the course. So the London Marathon is currently investigating reports that back-of-the-pack runners were insulted, called fat and slow, while the course was being torn down around them. There were even reports of water stations closing before runners arrived, and the cleanup crews spraying runners with cleaning fluids used to clean the streets. One woman reportedly came away with chemical burns and had to go to the hospital. One of the official pacers, a lady named Elizabeth Ayers, was pacing the 7:30 group, and she told reporters that the attitude and lack of support was the most disappointing part. She said, quote, "The whole marathon was just horrible. I had runners that were crying." She also said that she had encountered a number of issues, such as no water stations being available after the 3rd mile, cleanup operations starting while they were still running, and officials insulting competitors. Apparently, she heard comments from event workers, including, "If you weren't so fat, you could run faster, and it's a race, not a walk." So just, you know, really shocking and sad that not everyone had a great marathon experience out there. This pacer has done a total of 5 marathons and has also run the London Marathon previously, which she said usually has a very upbeat party atmosphere. And she was expecting that again on Sunday, but really had a totally different experience this year.
Yeah, this has become quite a scandal.
Yeah, I mean, there is no excuse to be calling people fat, to be tearing down the course around them. If you advertise that the course is going to be open to a certain time, you need to keep all the support available and make sure that, you know, the event workers are being respectful of those people no matter their finishing time. Because honestly, you know, if you're going to be out on the course for 7 hours and 30 minutes, that is hugely demanding on your body, you know, and they don't get the respect of the faster runners. And I can't imagine being out there and not having aid stations, you know, having the traffic barriers being taken down. You know, they said in the last few miles that it was even unclear kind of where the course went because it was just being dismantled. So yeah, hopefully a good resolution will come out of this, that there'll be awareness and that the same support that's extended to the first finishers will be able to be extended to, you know, the people in the back as well.
So I wonder if these runners were behind the sag wagon or still in front of the sag wagon.
It sounds like the sag wagon was getting overly aggressive and passing them. If the official 7:30 pacer was
still on the pace
and still on the course, and they were like tearing things down in front of them.
Yeah, so I think if a marathon advertises a generous cutoff time, you know, if you have 7.5 or 8 hours to finish the race, you got to keep it going. You got to keep the aid stations there. You got to keep the course up until the cutoff time.
And think about, you know, like one of the ever-present runners, Kenneth Jones, he finished in 7 hours and 40 minutes. You know, can you imagine someone in their 80s not having like course support around him? So
I couldn't imagine trying to organize something that huge. Over 40,000 runners going through a major city and just trying to just manage all that chaos. I would never want that job.
Yeah, it would be a big responsibility for sure. And of course, on a more positive note, the London Marathon is really known for its costumes. On the way to the start, actually, we talked to a runner who was carrying his ostrich costume in a bag. And I later saw him at the start line. There was a two-person dragon, a two-person dog. I saw a couple of trees out there. There was a guy who was running in a sleeping bag, a tent, a flip-flop, a running shoe. There was a guy dressed like Mrs. Doubtfire, you know, kind of like an old lady. There was a banana. We actually, a listener named Andy said, Angie and Trevor, have a fantastic time. And if you see a girl in a big sheep costume, that's a friend of mine running to raise money for our sheep sanctuary. So yeah, there was just an amazing amount of costumes out there. There were actually 38 official Guinness World Records set out of 78 attempts. The Guinness World Records has worked with the London Marathon for the last 12 years, and they offer finish line verification. And this really inspires some creative costumes out there. And I just am in awe because I know how challenging it is to run a marathon while not in costume. So, you know, mad respect to people who attempt this. Some of the highlights of the year, there was the fastest marathon dressed as a love heart, and that was done in 3 hours, 5 minutes, and 32 seconds. There was a married couple who set the record for fastest marathon with two runners handcuffed together. They finished an impressive time of 3 hours and 43 minutes.
Oh, man.
Rebecca, the wife, said, quote, "We were all right until 20 miles, and then my husband got a bit tired, so it was quite difficult at the end to be in sync and for me to motivate him. The chains were pulling." Her husband said, quote, "My legs were gone and my back had a spasm."
I guess you'd have to have like a synchronized arm swing.
Yeah, exactly. There's some of the other ones, standout ones here. Their fastest marathon dressed as a zombie, 2 hours, 43 minutes. Fastest marathon in a wedding dress, male, 2 hours and 49 minutes. Fastest marathon dressed as a nun, 3 hours and 12 minutes. Fastest marathon in the sleeping bag, that guy that I saw out there, 3 hours and 41 minutes. That looked very hot, by the way.
Yeah,
his head was like encased in the sleeping bag with just a little cutout.
What about the guy in the snowboarding outfit with boots and carrying a snowboard?
Yes, he finished in 5 hours and 21 minutes.
Man, I felt bad for that guy.
Then there was a group in a 6-person costume. They finished in 5 hours and 59 minutes.
What about the Big Ben guy who couldn't make it through the finish line gate?
Yes, is a video. There's a video of him that went viral. He's dressed as Big Ben. He's trying to cross the finish line in the costume. If you haven't seen it, go watch it as soon as you finish listening to this episode. He was running for the UK Alzheimer's Society and raised 5,000 pounds, but he can't get across the finish line. His costume's too tall. And so like the official's trying to help him get underneath. He has to like get down on his hands and knees and kind of like scoot across. Unfortunately, his time of 3 hours and 54 minutes wasn't enough to break the record of 3:34. And then his day got much worse when his costume was stolen post-race when he stopped for a drink in a pub.
You didn't mention this, but you also hear about that guy who set the fastest marathon time wearing ski boots. A guy named Dr. Paul Harnett ran a 5:30 marathon in ski boots.
Ouch. I hope he's a podiatrist. He can take care of his own feet later.
Well, that definitely made it fun, you know, seeing all these costume runners. It just really is an all-around fun marathon with the crowd support and the music and the costumes. You know, if you're like really serious about your times and just really a purist and just want to, you know, run a marathon where no one gets in your way and there's no foolishness, then the London Marathon's probably not for you.
Right, you know, exactly.
Unless you're up there with the elite pack. Because I don't know about you, Angie, but I spent like the last, 10 miles just weaving around people constantly.
Yeah, it was very congested.
So before we left for London, we did an episode where we talked about our training. And Angie, you mentioned that you wanted to see your finish time have a 3 in front of it. In just a moment, we want to hear how things came together for you, what your finish time was, and what you felt went right. Before we do that, I'd like to thank our episode sponsor, CEP Compression. I'll tell you what, compression gear is great because it promotes recovery. And I also like to wear compression socks while I run. In fact, I wore compression socks for this race. I feel like that helps preserve my legs longer. And I know, Angie, that sometimes you will do that too. And you also like to slip in the compression tights after a race.
More like Russell compression tights on. There's no slipping into them. And that's how you know that you have a good product like CEP Compression. CEP is for the pressure that really helps you win at whatever activity you're doing, and also especially helps you recover.
Yeah, it's a German company, and we're really proud to have them as a sponsor of the show. You guys should check out their tall compression sock. That's what I like to wear, you know, ones that come all the way up to the knee. They have one called the 3.0. It has an updated look, an upgraded fit and feel. It has a blend of 16 different yarns. I think there's like a mile of yarn that goes into making these things, but it still has that same best-in-class graduated compression. And now, you like this, Angie, it's a little easier to put on.
That's helpful for sure. Go ahead and visit cepcompression.com and you can use the code podcast for 15% off. And that's valid through June 1st. That's cepcompression.com and use the code podcast to save 15% through June 1st. We'd also like to thank Tiger Balm Active. Tiger Balm Active is designed for physical, athletic people like long-distance runners. When we push ourselves hard, pain sometimes happens, but we don't need to suffer thanks to Tiger Balm Active's three pain relief products. And these include the Muscle Rub, which is a non-greasy pre-workout warming cream that gets sore muscles ready to go for peak performance. They also have the Muscle Gel, which is a non-sticky, cool-to-warm gel that helps with muscle fatigue. And that's perfect for a post-workout cool-down. In fact, I just used that one after I did a lower body strength training workout where I usually get really sore. So that's very effective. And then there's the Tiger Balm Active Muscle Spray that helps relieve pain in those hard-to-reach areas.
So we all know that pain happens, but suffering is optional. Start using Tiger Balm Active. Go to your local CVS or Rite Aid store and you can find it. That's Tiger Balm Active. So overall, Angie, did you like the London Marathon?
Yes, I had a very positive experience overall. Yeah, it was amazing.
I agree. It was an amazing race. I would definitely go back and do it again. So how did you do? How did you perform on race day, Angie?
Well, one thing that was in my favor was the fact that I think the weather was ideal for a marathon. It was cool, overcast for most of the morning, like mid-40s to maybe mid to high 50s. So it kind of actually sprinkled a couple times, but then the rain didn't stay around. So it was really ideal weather.
It was.
And I like cooler weather for running. Nothing gets me down more than heat. we talked about how the first few miles were pretty congested, and I really had to stay mentally focused to keep on pace, especially around the aid stations and any time the road would narrow. Yeah, I'm a person who tends to like smaller races a bit better. I find that large marathons take just more concentration and more mental effort. Plus, there were spectators along the whole route, and that kind of always keeps me from zoning out, too, because, you know, people are clapping and cheering, and there's runners in costumes all around. It's just always something to look at.
Did you keep hearing your name? I kept hearing my name called.
I did, and then I realized there was a guy named Andrew who was running around me.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have my name on my shirt or anything. And despite the amount of runners there were, I posted fairly fast 5K and 10K splits, which made me a little bit nervous because, I mean, on one hand, I was feeling good, but then I was afraid that, you know, I was going to get handed that proverbial piano later in the race from going out too fast. So the British expression, keep calm and carry on, came to my mind. You know, I'm like thinking about, oh no, maybe I'm going too fast. You know, how is this all going to work out? Just keep calm and carry on.
Perfect.
About the 10-mile mark, my right hamstring was making a few protests, and I started dealing with some negative thinking. You know, you'd think after as many marathons as I've done that I would have a handle on my mental game, but I think it's something that every runner struggles with, no matter how many races they've done. So here are some of the things that were going through my mind, among many things. How will I ever keep up this pace? Another thing was, if I'm hurting now, it's probably only going to get worse, you know, like catastrophizing, like, you know, not being in the mile that I was in, basically. Another thought was like, how hard do I want to work or suffer to go sub 4? you know, I'm kind of like battling these things in my mind. And I really had to work hard to bring my thoughts into a more positive space and really just enjoy the experience and the scenery around me. You know, thinking, I'm like, I'm here at the London Marathon, just soak it in and just enjoy it. You know, don't put so much pressure on yourself to run fast. Around mile 18, my stomach started feeling a little bit off, kind of like a rerun of my stomach flu feeling. So I was like, oh no, you know, I was getting a little bit worried. So I stopped at the bathroom, everything was fine, but it did cost me about 3 minutes because, as most people know, it's very difficult to peel down and up sweaty layers. Mm-hmm. And then I managed to drop my phone on the ground too in the midst of it. So I'm like fumbling for my phone. But, you know, I was glad that I stopped just because it took, you know, it was more peace of mind for later in the race. Sometimes if you like have that in the back of your mind, like maybe I should use the bathroom, you really cannot like focus back on the race until you just stop and go.
Just repeat this. I am the master of my bladder. I am the captain of my fate.
I was worried more about gastrointestinal things, to be honest. Wasn't my bladder speaking. So like we've mentioned, the London course is fairly flat. It does have a few small hills. And on the uphill sections, I reminded myself that I trained on much more challenging hills. So that really kind of made it into a mental boost to like, oh, these little hills are nothing, you know.
You looked at the hills and said, I fart in your general direction.
Well, I was trying not to fart at that time, but yeah. And I really started to look forward to getting past the 20-mile mark, and I decided that my mantra would be, I'm stronger after mile 20. I knew that with my previous marathon experiences that I can more easily push through the challenges and the pain just because no matter how much it hurts, I can get to that finish line. You know, it's kind of like mind over matter.
I like it. I'm stronger after mile 20.
It's not very elegant, but it's what worked. I also started paying more attention to my mile splits, and I realized that I needed to keep my pace sub 9:30 if I was going to finish in under 4 hours. So I was kind of like chanting my I'm stronger after mile 20 mantra under my breath, and I really did feel strong for the last 10K. In fact, there were many runners who just would abruptly start walking in the middle of the course, which made those final miles feel a bit more congested. And I had to do a fair amount of weaving around people to stay on pace. And I always find that during most marathons, there is, you know, some point in the race that it kind of feels like a blur. Like even though you try to soak it all in and like remember things, it just, things kind of blend together a bit. But of course, I remember going through a couple of those tunnels, running down the Royal Mile, of course, hearing the announcer at the finish line and the cheering crowds. And I was really thankful that I had a good burst of final speed to cross the finish line.
So when we registered for this race, you have to input what your predicted finish time is. You put 3:59:30. as your predicted finish time.
Right.
So what was your final actual finish time at the London Marathon?
Well, it's really hard to believe, but my actual finish time was 3:59:30. So it was pretty shocking how a time I had projected like months and months ago actually came true.
You're gonna have to aim higher next time.
I know. For sure. And I really felt surprisingly emotional. I didn't realize it would feel that good to meet my goal and finish my first sub-4 marathon in over 3 years. It had been a long time since I'd gone sub-4. And I just felt so incredibly grateful, you know, for having a strong, healthy body and the good training cycle I'd had. And it really felt great to put that medal around my neck and to have finished my 57th marathon and, of course, my 4th world marathon major. So, yeah, it just felt really momentous. And it's always cool, you know, you see people around you who are going through a variety of motions, you know, some people who are in a lot of pain, some people who are breaking down crying just from happiness and joy and, you know, people hugging each other. I just think finish lines are such an amazing place. And I kind of got swept up into the emotions of the finish line area.
So there's a couple questions that you got from social media about your experience and your training. Here's a question from Abby. She says, Angie, how did the marathon feel compared to others? So curious how your experience was concerning all the hard work you've done and the different approach that you took.
Yeah, that's a good question, Abby. Every marathon has its own feel, although there are definitely some similarities between races. I feel like I was able to recover well after my speed walking marathon in February, and my body responded really well to running 6 days per week. I was also very intentional about strength training 2 to 3 times per week, doing yoga on a weekly basis, and of course, getting 8 hours of sleep a night. Really, so much of the training load that your body is able to handle comes down to your ability to recover. I really feel like focusing on recovery was key for me. Another huge factor that led me to feeling so good was having dropped 20 pounds in the previous few months. It's amazing how much better that you can run and train and recover, you know, when you're carrying around less fat. So I really think that the weight loss can help account for the 20-minute time difference between what I ran in London and the marathon that I ran back in September of 2018, which I did in 4:20. And I also think the extra rest that I got in the pre-marathon week helped me feel strong on race day. I didn't run for 5 days before the marathon. I mean, partially because I was sick and we did a lot of walking in London, but also because I just felt like my body could use the extra rest, traveling internationally and stuff. One of the biggest mistakes that I see runners make is not following their taper pre-marathon. Sneaking in those extra runs or extra miles is not going to give you an edge on race day, and it may actually be detrimental. So I feel like just following my taper and erring on the side of more rest the week before the marathon really, really helped. So tell us a little bit more about your marathon experience. So how did it all come together for you?
Oh, it came together great. My goal going into this marathon was just to enjoy myself, have a good time. I definitely knew I wanted to finish under 5 hours. But yeah, I got out there and just felt good and was able to cruise on through to like mile 20. It didn't even hurt, you know, didn't even feel tired. I was thinking to myself, this doesn't even start till mile 20.
Right. That is true.
And it started in a strange way, like looking forward to it. Like I wanted the pain. I wanted a chance to wrestle with it again.
So your mantra was bring on the pain, huh?
Yeah, I just wanted to wrestle with the pain again. And pain was faithful to show up like it always does.
You were not disappointed, huh?
Yep. Hip flexors start getting tight and legs start getting achy and all that stuff. But I don't think I ever got really fatigued in my mind. So I stepped out of a porta potty around like mile 21 and saw the 4:15 pacer guy go by. I'm like, wow, I'm doing better than I thought because I didn't bring my watch on this one. I was just running according to feel. So I kept running along, and then all of a sudden, the 4:30 pacer guy catches me and we had about 3 miles to go. So then I figured, I'll just stay with this guy. So we got to talking, and I said, how accurate are you on time? He's like, well, as long as you hold this pace, you should have a 40-second window to finish sub 4:30.
Wow.
So I'm like, oh, this is awesome, man. I'm going to go sub 4:30.
Oh, no.
I'm like, yeah, I'm like running down a dream. You know, I'm like running my heart out. 4:30, come on. I can see those numbers like blazing across the sky. People are out cheering. Crowds are full of energy because you turn right in front of Buckingham Palace and then you go just a little further and cross the finish line. Sometimes the Royals are out there, but I didn't care. I wasn't going to see him anyway because I'm so focused on sub 4:30. And I'm pushing, cross the finish line. Pretty confident because I know I like left the 4:30 guy behind me. So I'm like, yeah, sub 4:30. And then people that follow us online immediately started like giving us props on Facebook. And someone looked at my time and it said 4:38.
We usually find out our official time from listeners before we know it ourselves.
Exactly.
Somebody's like, oh, let's get on social media to figure out like what our splits were.
So I don't know what happened to that 4:30 guy. I got a bone to pick with that guy. Filling me full of false hope.
Oh. Well, it was sub 4:40.
But I'm just really happy that I basically ran for fun, according to feel, no watch, and finished in 4:38, feeling good. I could eat, you know, right afterwards.
Another cool thing is that they had a special brew of the London Pride beer that was offered free to marathoners at several locations around London. So you could go in and present this coupon and get a free pint.
Yeah, as far as I could see, they weren't serving beer at the finish line.
Right, I didn't see that.
But you get this coupon, which is good at, you know, 20 different pubs around London.
There was also a dozen restaurants or so offering free food options if you were wearing your finisher's medal. So we didn't, like, take advantage of any of that. But, you know, if you do your homework, you can kind of, like, eat for free or discounted at several spots around London.
How did I miss that one?
I don't know. Seems like something that you would be, like, right on.
So here's what's amazing. Okay, this race is just packed full of people. People are streaming across the finish line. There's people everywhere, families, spectators, runners. And after I got all my food and I was sitting there, and Simon Wright comes by from the meetup. So I saw him, he saw me, and we talked for a while, but we just kind of looked at each other at first and like had the biggest smiles because like, what are the chances at the end of a marathon, we're already feeling fantastic that you accomplished that epic thing. And then you see, you know, a buddy. And actually Simon sent me an email a couple days later. He said, "This was my second marathon and I found the race both enjoyable and frustrating. Because I was racing for a charity, I was placed in one of the last corrals and I found it hard to get into a running flow as the streets were so narrow and it was often hard to overtake. My New York marathon time last November was 4 hours 3 minutes exactly and I really wanted to go sub 4 in London, but it wasn't meant to be. I came in at 4 hours exactly to the second. Can you believe that?"
Wow, that is pretty unusual to get such an even number.
Yeah. He says, "Nevertheless, I'm proud of my achievement. I beat my previous time." He said he went from a total non-runner just 16 months ago to now finishing 2 marathons. And he's got Berlin coming up in September.
All right. Good luck at Berlin. It seemed like there was a better flow of running at the Berlin Marathon, less runners, so that's helpful.
Yeah.
And of course, they had really stellar organization there as well. So yeah, you've got this, Simon.
Yep. So then I managed to get on the tube, made it back to the hotel room, and then we went out seeking some good pub food, right?
That's right.
And the next day, we went to the British Museum, kept walking, kept drinking, kept eating, and continued to enjoy our time in the great city of London. And then Tuesday, we had to leave. So we flew back home with a one-night stopover in Iceland, in Reykjavik, which is like a cherry on top for the whole vacation. Because when we were in Reykjavik, we actually rented a car, and then we went to the Blue Lagoon, which is this amazing, beautiful geothermal pool. It's hard to describe. You just got to go look it up. There were other marathoners there, too.
Yeah, we actually ran into a couple of ladies, one who had done the marathon, so more people had the same idea.
Well, that's it, folks. Thanks for letting us take you on this recap journey of the London Marathon. We definitely highly recommend this race. It's worth the wait to get into, or if you go the charity route like we did, we recommend that too. We're definitely appreciative to all the race organizers and all the spectators and all the people that made this race possible. And of course, all the folks that came to the MTA meetup and the friends that we got to meet and make in the great city of London. And shout out to all our listeners in the UK. We had a fabulous time in the country and definitely look forward to coming back and running more races there. And special thanks to the John Muir Trust for making our London Marathon dreams possible and allowing us to represent them. They're doing amazing work across the UK preserving wild lands. You can learn more at johnmuirtrust.org/MTA. And thanks also to Generation UCAN for sponsoring this episode. They make a slow-release superstarch that is our go-to source for fuel on long runs and races. And of course, you can use the code MTALondon to save 15% off on your order. That's MTALondon at generationyoucan.com.
And thanks again to CEP Compression. Check out the latest tall compression sock from CEP. It's a 3.0 with an updated look, upgraded fit, and feel thanks to a blend of 16 yarns with the same best-in-class graduated compression. Visit cepcompression.com and use the code PODCAST for 15% off from now until June 1st. That's cepcompression.com and use the code PODCAST.
And of course, you can see photos from our trip and from the London Marathon over on the blog, as well as read our full show notes if you want to do that. That's marathontrainingacademy.com. And if we can help you in any way in your marathon journey, be sure to reach out. We have a contact form on our site as well. We'd love to help you take your running to the next level. Until next time, keep taking action in your goals. And remember, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Run on my way, run on my way.